Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. The 2025 season is here. Padres begin play on Thursday. That's tomorrow as we record this on Wednesday. Chris Sale for the Braves, reigning Cy Young winner, on the mound. And Michael King on the mound for the Padres. He was seventh in Cy Young voting, which doesn't get you anything, but does tell you that we have two very good pitchers going tomorrow. Four games against the Braves, three games against the Guardians, and then off on the road, and the season is off and running. Ryan, where would you like to start?
First of all, hello, Kevin. Happy 2025. How are you?
Ah, super, super. It is. It's sort of like Happy New Year.
New Year.
This is when I consider it to start. It's my second start, or third, if you actually count the actual New Year's, and then spring training, and then, oh my gosh, it's actually happening. Opening day is here.
The Padres will set their opening day roster here shortly. Without making this podcast all about the final decisions that were made, let's talk a little bit about how they're rounding this club out heading into 2025. And sort of on the whole, Kevin, where do we think opening day's roster this year compares to the roster that was on the field for the final game of last year's division series?
Oh, that's an interesting one, because I'm always comparing it to last year's opening day.
Right.
because it's better than last year's opening day. But you know what? Or at least what we thought, because we didn't know what Jackson Merrill was going to do, and we didn't know what Jerickson Profar was going to do, and we didn't know Luis Arraez was going to be a Padre, and David Peralta and Donovan Solano were going to be Padres and play a huge role, and Kyle Higashioka was going to hit 15 home runs or 17, whatever he hit. It was like 15 after June 1st or something. But compared to that team, you know, Yu Darvish was healthy and throwing the heck out of the ball. You know, I bet you Dylan Cease is in a better place. Tatis is fully healthy. I think it compares favorably. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I think, like we so often talk on here, the season is going to come down to how the highest paid and best players perform. And if you look at those guys, I think that it's really, you know, there haven't been any off-season injury concerns. These are guys who are back and fresh. But you know what? Everybody is back and fresh and healthy in spring training almost all the time. To me, that's a good sign, though. You know, you're heading into opening day here. The Padres sort of what are we going to call these guys? Big three? Is it a big four? Has Jackson Merrill joined whatever the big number is? I mean, I would say Tatis, Machado, and Bogarts, you know, all seem to be trending in a good direction as the season opens.
I would say this, and it's a good point that you make, because we should get into like the bench decisions. And yeah, you know, okay, by recent performance in major league regular season games, you know, the bench doesn't overly excite you. But, you know, we can get into that. But you're right. This core is almost as good as any other team's core. And if you say it's not, I just don't think that – I think you live in kind of a myopic world where you're comparing what your team has to some ideal, which is kind of what we do. You know, we fall into that trap a lot. I think it's the big two. And here's my argument on that. And I'm a big Jackson Merrill guy. And I'm big on what Xander Bogaerts has been and can be. But the fact is, Manny Machado and Fernando Tatis Jr. are two of the best hitters in the league. Machado, for sure, has established that he's one of the best hitters of this generation. Tatis, certainly, I don't think anyone would deny, if he can stay healthy, can be that guy. But Xander Bogaerts does have a lot to prove. Look, Xander Bogaerts, if you go back and you look, gets over the wrist injury or gets the cortisone shot in 2023 and finishes as the Padres' second best player in the second half after Juan Soto. Comes back from the shoulder injury last year and finishes, I don't know what it was, but it was third behind Manny and Xander Bogaerts. Like, he finished strong both of these years. How about he puts together one of those years like he had several times in Boston? I think that's huge for the Padres. And Jackson Merrill ascending. Look, other than that Major League Baseball's hard, like, I don't think there's any reason to think Jackson Merrill won't keep ascending. That's it. I don't see any reason why, other than a very important one. Major League Baseball's hard.
Yep. His work ethic hasn't changed. Nothing about him has changed from year one to year two. Yeah, but you're right. Baseball is hard. He wouldn't be the first Rookie of the Year candidate to have a sophomore slump.
Yeah, they really ruined it for us, by the way. I'm just going to say it one more time, because I don't care about the Rookie of the Year, because it's It's an award that then really you put on the shelf and now you're trying to win MVPs. He should have been the MVP, or I mean the he should have been the rookie of the year. Anyway, that's it.
Yeah, no, he should have been. He should have been. Absolutely. I'm going to ask you about a couple position battles as we enter opening day here. These things were settled here in the last couple of days. The last guy off the bench, Brandon Lockridge, won that spot. You know, when I expressed some surprise, you said, no. He outplayed everybody in camp. What does he bring and what did he do in camp to earn this position?
In your defense, Ryan, you've had a lot going on there. But anyone that was surprised by the composition of this bench wasn't paying attention. And by the way, I applaud you that you weren't, not you, Ryan. Like anybody that's not paying attention to spring training, you must have something better going on, you know? Like, I don't know, watching reruns of Seinfeld would be better in some instances. Like, it's spring training. Brandon Lockridge won that job, and he won that job so much that they made what was for them a difficult decision. And I know there's a lot of people that look at the baseball card and, you know, go, Tyler Wade was highly valued on this team for his personality, his knowledge, his willing to share that knowledge, his energy that was constant. And he did have some big hits, some big bunts, some big steals. Like, he started at six positions. That's how good Brandon Lockridge was. He forced them to make a decision there because a lot of the same skill set is what Brandon Lockridge brings, except he can start in left field against left-handers. He can be a defensive replacement for Jason Hayward late in games. He can spell the other two outfielders, and he's fantastic at it. So that's how good he was. And you got your Yuli Gurriel, Jose Iglesias, Martin Maldonado, who are an infusion of experience and you know, work ethic and wanting to show other guys how to play by both sharing and by who they are. So they felt they could do without Tyler Wade. Sometimes there's really important things. I will continue to go on about the bench because I was hoping that Ryan would ask me about the bench. And some of this has to do with, look, Connor Joe. You could argue that he earned his way onto the team. In a lot of other springs, Connor Joe would be on this team. Plays left field, can play right field, plays first base, gets on base, a professional at bat, can run a little bit. But you know what? He had options. And Yuli Gurriel was either going to stay or he was going. And the same with Jose Iglesias, staying or going. And now I'm not saying those guys didn't earn it because you might not believe it, but Yuli Gurriel looked really good. Jose Iglesias looked good. Martin Maldonado brings a lot behind the plate and certainly not at the plate, but, you know. Right. It just was that hard of a decision for these guys. And some of it comes down to, if you put this guy on, like Yuli Gurriel, Gavin Sheets, well then where's our pinch running going to come from? Okay, so we need that kind of guy, and we need a guy who can bunt for us. And so you got that. You got who has options, who doesn't. People disappointed, and look, they should be. The Padres are disappointed that Eggy Rosario did not step up and grab that job. Eggy Rosario's out of minor league options. He's a homegrown guy, been in the organization as long as anyone, but like, he was either going to earn a job or he was going to be, you know, claimed by another team, and that's probably what will happen if they can't work a trade for him for something, maybe like a number eight starter or something like that for depth. But the fact is the Padres are in win now mode. We can get into that later, what that means, why it's important, as if we have to explain why winning is important, but they are in win now mode. They believe, several people in the organization have talked about, man, Eggy's going to go somewhere and he's going to be a decent player. He's going to get a lot of playing time for a team that's not that good, and he's going to end up being a decent player. The Padres did not have the time to have, you know, to get those bad at-bats out of Eggy, to get those bad moments in the – to tolerate those bad moments in the field, right, to go through the learning curve that they were able to give players in the past. They can't do that now. That doesn't mean – like, Connor Joe's going to be on this team soon. It doesn't mean – I mean, I'm telling you, Jason Hayward, Iglesias to some extent, definitely Yuli Gurriel as well. These are guys that they liked what they saw in spring for the most part. Now, what are they going to do in the regular season? It's possible all of them, none of them, one of them, two of them are on the team on May 1st or June 1st or, you know, July 15th. Like, it's proven. They have to win now.
Right. And, you know, I would caution anybody, any Padres fans or any listeners and readers out there who are freaking out over the composition of this bench on opening day, do me a favor, go back and look at who was on the opening day roster last year and the year before and the year before that. These pieces, especially the non-starters, I'm not saying that they're expendable because they're not, right?
It's look at last year's bench. Exactly.
Right. Good teams have good benches, right? But, you know, just because you're on the roster on opening day doesn't mean at all that you're going to be a part of this team going forward. You have to earn it day in and day out. You know, I think of somebody like David Dahl, right? Big part of their roster 2 years ago, disappeared and we never heard from him again. We spent more time and energy talking about Nelson Cruz, who never did anything. Matt Carpenter, who might be best known for not playing for a month and staying on the team somehow. You know, there were all of these guys who at some point, if you can play, you can stay. But, you know, this they're not committing necessarily to having all of these guys on the bench all year long.
It's the same idea of it being a long season of, you know, we point toward opening day. And look, the Padres have shown in some recent years that, you know, how you start is important, right?
Right.
But, like, you could look up at the end of the year and Brian Hoeing could have a 1 ERA. And you'll forget he missed the first month or month and a half of the season, right? Like, it's just Yu Darvish, let's say that it is what they say and that they believe rest and he'll be back, by, let's say, by May. And then he's healthy the rest of the way. I get it. Big if. But he is. You'll forget he missed the first month. Like, it's kind of the same thinking of it's a long season. Right. Do not want to. I think part of the reason that we were all it's what a beat writer does. It's what a hardcore fan does to a certain extent. It's definitely what the personnel men on the team do is kind of geek out over the roster spots at the end. Mm-hmm. But like we also all were able to point to last year and go, look how important the bench was, right? Has anyone ever been that excited about the bench on the Padres before? Like, you know, so this is I think that's a part of it, but I cannot stress enough because, again, my job to kind of tell how it is and tell how the Padres think that, like, how important it is that the core of this team performs up to its capabilities, that Dylan Cease and Michael King have top 10 Cy Young years, that Nick Pivetta maybe has his best ERA ever, that a couple of those couple of the two, three, four starters. Yes, Kyle Hart, Randy Vasquez starting the season, the rotation, but two, three, four others come up and give you five, six starts. And that's quality. Like the people that are going to be contributing on a big basis. Here's how longtime personnel person having a conversation the other day that yes, no one's going to deny those bench guys are going to maybe be the difference in 5 to 10% of your games, maybe even 15 or 20%. Mm-hmm. That leaves an awful lot of games that Manny Machado and Fernando Tatis Jr. and Xander Bogaerts and Jackson Merrill and Jake Cronenworth have to decide.
Right, right. Two quick questions before we go on to sort of big picture season stuff. You know, your left fielder is going to be, I mean, is it Jason Hayward against righties and Brandon Lockridge against lefties?
Right now, but I also throw Gavin Sheets in there, maybe. But yes, right now, if you looked at it, there was all but one game when a lefty was pitching at Peoria and a righty was pitching out in Goodyear that Jason Hayward went to Goodyear. And other than that, he was in there with the regulars every single time. He is your regular left fielder. You face more right-handers than left-handers. Now, tomorrow, I would expect Brandon Lockridge to be your opening day left fielder.
Right. Catcher, it's going to be Elias Diaz and Martin Maldonado. How do we see those starts sort of splitting up?
You know, there's 100 to 62, 90 to 72. Okay. There's another one that, you know, last few years on this team, I'm kind of used to there being three catchers, right? Someone gets a broken finger or something, you know, Luis Camposano. And, you know, we probably don't have time. We were already halfway into this thing to talk about what the future of Luis Camposano is now that he's starting in AAA again. But, you know, Martin Maldonado is 38, but, you know, he caught 116, started 116 games for a team that went to the ALCS 2 years ago. Wow. Okay. Didn't do so much last year for the White Sox. Don't really know what the story was there. With those kind of teams, it can be kind of weird. You would think like you'd have a guy like sometimes a more experienced guy in there. But then on the other hand, like why have him in there? Of course, he also hit like 109 or 119 or something. But anyway, Elias Diaz is the primary catcher.
Gotcha. And Luis Campusano returns to El Paso.
That's one of those, though. You know, Manny can hit 142 in April.
Right.
And Manny will be your third baseman.
Right.
Elias Diaz hits 142 while Maldonado's hitting 160 and has three home runs. Mm-hmm. Maybe Maldonado's the regular catcher by May. That's one of those positions, just like left field, right?
Right.
That we could see some changing.
Right. Kevin, the Padres last year had, the second best regular season record in the history of their franchise. I think we could argue that they probably stood pat or maybe regressed just a little with their offseason moves. The Los Angeles Dodgers, meanwhile, won the World Series and then went out and got every decent free agent available, it appears, except for Juan Soto. We talk about this all the time on this show. If you're going to compare yourself to the Dodgers, you're not going to be happy very often. What is success for this Padres team in 2025?
Winning a wild card and seeing what happens. And that's really what it is. I mean, right? Like eventually, I don't know. You could argue, you could convince me that the Padres are to the point now, three playoff appearances in five seasons, that not going to at least the NLCS or not going to the World Series or whatever is a disappointment, right? Mm-hmm. But get into the playoffs and see what happens.
Okay.
That's what it is. I believe that's imperative. Mm-hmm. Now, This is the best part about it now that it starts. That's why you play the games. Right. A rash of injuries. The Diamondbacks go 112, in 50 and finish second. And the Giants win 104 games. And the Padres win 94 games and don't go to the playoffs. Like, well, some crazy stuff happens, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think you consider the season a failure then.
Right, right.
But all things being equal – a normal season, it's imperative the Padres go. And I could go on and on. Keeping fan loyalty and the momentum you've built there. AJ Preller keeping his job. The culture continuing to be built that they believe that they started to build last year. There's just a lot of reasons that I will say that going to the playoffs again now is imperative. And the big one is, Manny Machado and Xander Bogaerts aren't getting any younger. Dylan Cease and Michael King and Luis Arraez and probably Robert Suarez are going to be hitting free agency. I mean, this is a roster built for 2025. Now, I'm not saying it's not also built for the future, but there is urgency, and they have not shied away from it.
Sure, and we've talked on this podcast for a year now, Kevin. If I'm a Padre fan, I think I'm far more concerned about what the Diamondbacks are doing night in and night out than what the Dodgers are doing. Just in terms of,
unless you're playing them.
Yes. The Dodgers have unlimited resources, right? I mean, we can say that. Unlimited resources and the best roster in baseball. I think that catching them, I'm not sure that's necessarily realistic, but like you said, wild card spot, that means you've made the tournament. I mean, I know it's still March technically, so I can use basketball analogies, but at some point make the tournament as a relatively high seed and try to get hot.
Hey, since the podcast is a place to do random stuff, uh-huh. I just want to go off of what you said there. The Dodgers have unlimited resources. Okay, so best estimates by multiple sources is the Padres realize $20 to $30 million in media revenue mm-hmm. a year. Now, the Dodgers, $334 million a year in TV revenue. Another thing, the Dodgers are owned by the Guggenheim Group for the most part, right? That's their big owner. I remember how people got confused about Peter Seidler being a billionaire, which he was not, because online, very scary place to get your information sometimes, it would talk about how the Seidler equity, it would get it confused, and Seidler equity controlled like $3 to $5 billion in assets, right? Mm-hmm. And so that was not Peter's money, right? That was what his company controlled. So, but just to give you an idea, I will say, that's a lot of money, right? Mm-hmm. The Guggenheim Group controls $330 million in assets. So the Dodgers just have oodles. I think that's a word.
You said 330
more resources than the Padres. I am not making excuses for the Padres. Like, do what you have to do to win or sell the team, you know? Right. But like, that's just the reality. I wanted to drive that home. That is just the reality.
Tell me that number again, Kevin.
They control $330 million in assets. So that would be whatever, 100 times what Seidler Equity controls. Now, look, this isn't scientific. I'm not saying that like that means that they're 100 times more. No. But like, I'm throwing out some gigantic numbers and disparity that kind of illustrates like what the situation is.
Sure. And you know what? I think a lot of San Diegans are perfectly comfortable with this narrative, you know, that San Diego's, the Padres have always been the little brother, if they've been acknowledged at all by the Dodgers. And, you know, somebody had asked me in a separate forum here, you know, well, if you're the Padres, is it time to get really serious? You know, because, man, you got to play really good baseball to beat the Dodgers. I said, no, it's time to do the things that drive the Dodgers crazy even more. Right. I mean, more flash, more fun. That kind of stuff. I don't think the Padres' problem is that they're not committed enough to winning.
Beat them in the regular season series and beat them in the playoffs because it is baseball. And the Dodgers have been really good. Maybe not this good. I mean, mm-hmm. on paper, sure. Mm-hmm. But they've been really good for a dozen years, and they've won two World Series. And you know, one of them, I give them credit because they won the World Series everyone was trying to win, but it was an asterisk. So they've won one World Series since 2013, but then, you know, we're not counting 20 because we're not counting 20 for anyone.
Right. And again, the Yankees played the Dodgers last year in the World Series. It was arguably the two best teams in baseball. That almost never happens lately.
Yeah, maybe the two best teams met in the National League Division Series. Yeah, but yes, that's, you know, I know that if you're not really familiar, you didn't live through last year as a fan or someone who follows a team like me or you or whatever, like you don't know what that, you know, how true that statement is that the Padres were a really good team. But you're right. Like the Yankees, the Dodgers, I think, was what kind of a lot of people expected to be in the World Series last year.
Sure. Let's wrap it here, Kevin. And I'm saving this for last for a number of reasons, but you know, there's going to be an empty chair tomorrow in the press box. You know, we lost our colleague Bryce Miller over the weekend. He had been sick. He had also worked pretty much day in and day out. And as recently as the end of February in Peoria with you, you guys had, I thought, a hilarious relationship. You drove each other crazy. You got on each other's nerves. But ultimately, there is mutual respect there. Let's talk a little bit about our friend Bryce.
Yeah, and first, you know, kudos to you because you're the one who dealt with a lot of things with his family. You wrote, I'd like to save my superlatives, and that was an incredible tribute to him and your obituary. And really, it was a feature on a great feature writer. I was with Bryce. I'm pretty sure I. Last person to sort of see him functioning. I watched him fade before my eyes. I watched him write his last column, and it was really hard on him. It was kind of a testament to what Bryce did working through that bladder cancer. It was unbelievable. And there are people, like players were asking me, and you know, Bryce is not around all the time, but like, this was a testament. Like guys that would talk to him a lot, Jake Cronenworth talked to Bryce a lot. They had Big Ten, you know, in their blood, both of them. Mm-hmm. He didn't know Bryce had cancer.
Wow.
You know, there were some other people that over a lot of people asked about Bryce and the last few weeks and people didn't know he had cancer. So that was a testament to Bryce. Mm-hmm. I will tell people forever about this relationship that I have with Bryce. Who I'm not going to try to paint that we were terribly close. We did drive each other crazy. I did enjoy teasing him. It was one of my great joys in life.
Right.
And you and I and Bryce went fishing this off season, and I got to know Bryce on a different level this off season. And that was, you know, we got to know each other. This will be the first year in, I don't know, 3-4 years, probably since the pandemic, that Bryce hasn't been on one or two long trips with me. You spend a lot of time with a guy. Korea last year, spent a lot of time with a guy. But to get to know Bryce the way that his friends at Clems knew him and his friends from Iowa knew him. He's a really, really, really decent human being. And we don't have enough of that. And we lost a decent, decent human being.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I think if there were ever any criticisms of Bryce with his writing, and there were very few, it was that he wasn't taking out the long knives on people very often. And, you know, in a columnist role, it's really hard to be somebody you're not. I think that readers can tell if you're somebody you're not. And, you know, that just wasn't Bryce. You know, Bryce was a world traveler. Bryce loved going places and meeting people and trying to understand the way they lived. And he loved fishing and he loved his friends. And, you know, I think that he sought to understand people rather than rip them. And, you know, that was just who he was.
He wanted to get both sides. He was a storyteller.
Yeah, absolutely.
He would go into it's hard when you're a columnist and you don't know as much because you've got your hands in so many things, but this is one thing I knew, that when Bryce went to talk to someone about something, he was going to find out stuff that I didn't know. Mm-hmm. There was just something about folksy, funny little man, you know, those glasses and all those weird questions. He was going to find something where you read that column and you went, huh, wow. And he wrote it well. I cannot stress enough what a decent human being that we lost.
Yeah. He wrote a column, I think it was two autumns ago, essentially saying, hey, it's time to move on from Trent Grisham. Right. Maybe it was late summer of that disastrous, what was it? The 2023 season. And the next day he had written the column and he had cancer treatment the next day. It was digging. I call him and he goes, hey, I'm in the car. I said, oh, you're heading to treatment? He goes, no, I'm going to the ballpark. I said, why? He said, because I wrote something about Trent Grisham and I want to be in the clubhouse just in case Trent wants to come over and, you know, punch me in the nose or talk to me about what I wrote. And, you know, that's common decency. That's what good human beings do. That's not what every columnist in America
does. That's what beat writers should do.
Right.
That's not what everybody does. That's not what columnists do. You get to do what you want when you're a columnist.
Right. And a columnist, especially if you're a beat writer, Kevin, I've been a beat writer. A columnist can make your life a living hell sometimes. Pops in, writes something that's either uninformed or inflammatory, and then moves on to go cover the next thing. Right. Bryce didn't do that to you. Hardly ever.
No. Like I said, it's very important to me. We see this world around us. Becomes more important to me that someone, and that's why I got to know Bryce. It's why I wanted to get to know Bryce more recently, as he was a good guy. Mm-hmm. And you can't have too much of that. So obviously we don't have that in a measure anymore.
Right. I guess we'll go out on this. I mean, it's been about a month since he wrote for us, maybe a little bit more. Up until the last thing he wrote for us, it was all really good. And, you know, Bryce was sick and he knew he was sick and he was getting sicker. But I was watching him
do this work and you were talking about how difficult it was for him. But right. He just kept doing it.
He kept doing it. And it was, you know, I've heard from our readers who were so surprised. And, you know, I think that's a testament to the fact that, A, he went to the post, to use a horse racing term. He went to the post every day. You know, and the quality of his work was, you know, top notch all the way until the last couple, you know, all the way until the end.
And he had and the crazy thing was, is he did all that. And I know he was a big help to you because he just would write about anything and felt a responsibility to write about anything while also taking all his fishing trips, going to Japan right after we got back from Korea, by the way, went to Japan with his buddies. And you know, the stories that you and Jay Posner told from visiting him and the amount of and the depth of the love from a dozen friends that were there was that's a testament, man, because that's all you can do is leave a legacy.
Sure, absolutely. And again, to his brothers Brian and Bruce, his mom B, you know, we had a chance to meet all of them, and you know, chips off the old block there.
Oh my gosh, I came into the house in the UT spring training house. I got like, you know, two more Bryces there. Yeah, it was really something.
Yeah, and of course our thoughts go out to them, and you know, I would like to do something to honor Bryce in the UT, and you know, that's something we're thinking about right now. And so, you know, I know this won't be the last time we talk about our friend Bryce on here. You know, we're going to miss him. And it's sad that, you know, the start of baseball season is my favorite time of the year because it's a beginning and you don't know what's spreading out over the next 6 months. But the, you know, the end of Bryce's time with us, I think, is really going to hang over us here early. So, you know, I know what Bryce would want us to do would be to go the game and crack jokes and, you know, try to provide a little bit of levity. So
Bryce would want us to go to Clem's and have some beers.
I think we should do that too.
He would not want us to go to Whiskey Dave's.
Whiskey Dave's, Big Bear, California. Yes, yes. Do not go to Whiskey Dave's. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. Padres, Atlanta Braves, starting tomorrow, Thursday, at Petco Park. Chris Sale versus Michael King. Kevin, we usually go through the starting pitching. I think we can pass on that this time. You know, for those of us listening and watching online, we'll see you next time when we preview Padres Guardians. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.